Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What a week. Tim, how you been, man?
Yeah, not bad, man. How you doing, Jeep?
I've been, you know, a little wiped out, a little under the weather, but it just, you know, the week, you know, and it seems like a bad Monday, and it just seems like it's going to stretch on forever. That's kind of the one it was, you know. You just never really caught a break. Stuff kept happening. It piled up, but, you know, I've had a little bit of rest, and I want to get back to it. What do you think about this travel ban thing?
It caught me off guard. And you're right, Jeb. It has felt like a really, really long week. I've been having some crazy dreams.
Yeah? Like what?
I don't know. There was some woman called Emma Rosa on TV. A whole succession of blonde, tall women were screaming at me. There was a lot of McDonald's involved. Yeah, it's I feel a little wiped out from it all.
And then for some reason, I seem to remember my week ended. I just fixated on this vision of a man staring into a snow globe that had a white house in it.
Buzzy dream. What can it all mean?
Who knows? So the president's in the news again. Have you seen this?
Are we going to maintain this ruse for much longer?
I don't think so.
Or is it time to drop the curtain?
I'm hoping the ruse has already been edited down. Yeah, I think we can do it. How was your quadrennial cycle?
Jeb, we're back, baby!
Yes!
We took an entire presidential term off, but now we are back.
You know, I remember at the time thinking, like, honestly, what's going to happen? You know, I mean, so much of 2015 and 2016 is repetitive. I didn't think the guy had any new material, and I think it was borne out.
Well, I've been waiting a very long time for this. You don't know this. I went to the supermarket specifically to get a giant beer that I just needed to open up for you for today. I am slightly surprised we made it through. Like, the fact that I know there has been a lot of death, but the planet is here.
Temporarily. I mean, I don't want to, like, we, you know, before we did this, before we agreed to get on here, you asked me if I wanted to do any predictions. And I got to be honest, like, I'm not even comfortable on the planetary level.
Even a prediction that existence will remain for the next 4 years is too up in the air for you, a non-betting man, to get behind.
4 years seems like an awful long time on a galactic scale at this point.
Yeah, time has changed a lot in the last 4 years. What a fucking ride. How are you feeling? Have you been absorbing all the inauguration stuff? Because I've been pretty tuned out and just seeing some highlights like a fair-weather sports fan.
You didn't miss a lot. You missed a kind of like a Church of High Sorkinism extravaganza. I mean, it was pleasant, and it was interesting to see, like, in real time, a lot of people echoing how I was feeling, which is like, this is cornball, this is Church of High Sorkin, but I'll take it, you know, I'm fine. And this was kind of like an attitude I had had, something else we had talked about, like, it's okay to just take the day, take the W.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of understandable cynicism on Twitter of people being like, oh, yay, we've got Biden, everything's solved. Do you know what? Go to hell. Just give people 72 hours. It's been a long week, okay? Just give people 72 hours to be able to revel a little bit. I know that's not going to be popular with my fellow leftists, my progressive activist wing, but just to recognize that people are human beings and we need little moments of joy to remind everyone what we're actually fighting for.
Also, I think the kind of, I mean, Twitter is the home of, oh, so you know facts about something. Well, let me supply an additional fact that I'm going to assume you don't. And so there has been that attitude of like, well, you know, you're celebrating this, but these problems are going to be here tomorrow. And like, I absolutely get that, but it definitely feels like people 4 years later just doing yet another retrenchment on there's essentially no difference between Clinton and Trump. And like that ship fucking sailed. And it's that difference, I think, that allows everybody, like, you can take the week as far as I'm concerned, like maybe work harder next. Don't take as long a week as we did, but take this week and then work a little harder next week. But like, it was an aberration, and expecting people not to have like maybe an aberrant weepiness at something that might have been desperately hokey. And certainly, like, you know, it was fairly well trod ground from like the, you know, America's Church of Democracy. Like there wasn't anything challenging or new, but like, if you felt fucked up enough by 4 years to kind of cry at that, like, keep going. Your body is trying to tell you something.
You know who I've been seeing a lot of photos of? And boy, the man does not disappoint. It's Bernie Sanders, rugged up like someone's grumpy opa, holding what appears to be a massive envelope that he needs to go and post immediately after he leaves the inauguration at the post office.
Yeah, there were like there were a couple beautiful tweets, but like one of them was like Bernie dressed like it's a big day and this is just his first stop. You know, like he was going to drop by the post office. And
it was the vibe. He's on a collapsible deck chair just by himself, head to toe in what is obviously hand knitted winter wear. He's got these big grandpa mittens on. And at various points throughout the day, I saw him photographed holding something that looks like mail that needs to get in a letterbox somewhere, which I think is fantastic. He is going to be the chair of the Senate Budget Committee, which, in my limited understanding, that ain't nothing.
No, and it's properly frightening to, that, like, Bernie, you know, encapsulates the specter of, like, looming Stalinism just perfectly. So just having him be on the budget committee is, I'm sure, you know, intimidating enough. There's already been no shortage of memes on that theme from both sides, including one actually that I saw right before we kind of hopped on here was him in the Emperor's chair from Return of the Jedi, assuring everyone that the budget committee would be perfectly operational when all your austerity plans arrive. And I was like, all right.
We finally got a Bolshevik in the Senate Budget Committee, in the chair, no less. It's pretty cool.
But I think part of the adulation for him, or like, one, it's just a funny picture and people are just having fun. But he is also kind of like, nobody's as pure as the driven. But if you're going to do political memes, there's about a figure you've got, you know, in his case, he's enormously popular. And then there's not as much of a sense of like, well, if you're pointing a finger on Bernie Sanders' behalf, think about how many are pointing back at you. In the same way that if you stick up for Kamala Harris and somebody goes, ah, but Backpage, or ah, but, you know, mothers who don't have adequate child care and have truant children. It's like Bernie is just sort of, you can plop him into anything and nobody's going to go, hang on a minute, that's disrespectful to Palpatine.
And more importantly than how these poor schmucks are, Jeb, like what have you been doing in the intervening period? What's been going on with you?
Okay, so I'll do... So people who listen to, I have a podcast I do with David J. Roth, it was funny. I had a job at a website called 50 States of Blue, which we had a lot of VC money that was promised for 2 years and then disappeared in, I think, 4 months, where I was like the Trump columnist for a while. And then, of course, you know, so I'm doing that sort of side by side with Dave, and then Dave's took off and it was like, damn it. But we watch Hallmark movies and make fun of them gently, because that was like our response to Trump, was like, we just have to do something that's like insanely non-threatening to anyone. Because for me, like, and here I'll just do like a really quick downbeat thing, because if you have been listening to me on that podcast, you already know this, but like my wife had just really total postpartum depression for over 3 years. And that coincided with like pretty much the start of the campaign season. So when like I was about halfway through it when the inauguration hit, and then combined with like, you know, the downsizing that went on at Rolling Stone, the sort of the change in management with the introduction of what we would call like sort of the turf element of the Guardian op-ed page to the Guardian. So I'd lost these two jobs I really liked. And, you know, my wife was really checked out and I was taking care of a kid. And, you know, I'd just gotten off like having 18 months of death threats and shit and like increasing in virulence. And I just like, I was fucked up for a long time. Like I was just really, really, really unhappy. And so it was really difficult to do stuff. And like, I have anybody who's like, partly, I think that's why I'm so sympathetic to anybody who's like, I'm going to take the week. Cause like, I, you know, where am I going to get off chastising you for that? Like I did take the fucking quadrennial cycle, but you've been busy.
Are things better now though?
Yeah. Well, you know, I we have family therapy and I have a therapist and I have a, you know, medical regimen of pills to take to improve my mood. But yeah, it's just, you know, like every time it was just a, I think a lot of people went through their own specific version of this, which is why I kind of feel sheepish about detailing it. But like just sort of every time you think like, okay, I got a handle on this chaos and I can start climbing up, something would happen. And I finally started to feel good. And one of my best friends, a guy I had known since eighth grade and I was like virtually inseparable with for the first 2 years of college, just dropped dead in front of his wife and kids. And God, you know, so I was feeling good. And then suddenly I had to go to New Jersey to a funeral in the cold for 3 days. And like, you know, just that sort of stuff just sort of kept happening. And yeah, you know, go watch a Hallmark movie. Nobody's going to get hurt.
There's been a lot of that going around. You know, like just seeing the numbers tick up all the time on the COVID stuff happening in the US, I've been really making a concerted attempt periodically in my head to just like try to imagine the scale of human tragedy that is, just all of the hardship and the harm and the emotion that's going on, like every time that number ticks up. And it's obviously impossible for a human brain to comprehend, but like there's just a lot of that shit going around, eh?
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, the Stalin's quip is unfortunately always apt. And like, you kind of have to start thinking of big units that people are familiar with. The one I always try to use with people when I say, well, the death toll's this, and they're like, yeah, but realistically, I'm like, no, realistically, that's like, think of the largest sporting arena you've ever been in. And then picture six of those. And then picture how it would weigh on you traumatically if you had to go through with like, just a, you know, like a fucking bag full of magazines and put a bullet in the head of 80,000 people and go, well, got to do that five more times. Like, that's a lot. The enormity of confronting it, like, you can at least visualize that or like visualize your town. At this point, the American death toll is New Orleans.
Yeah, I don't think it's a useful, perhaps, activity for Americans to engage in because obviously you're in it. But I actually think it's kind of an important thing to reckon with, especially for we in New Zealand, who, under the stewardship of everyone's favorite national leader, Jacinda Ardern, we've gotten through pretty unscathed. You know what's fucking hilarious? I do remember just before we threw the towel and you were like, we should talk about New Zealand politics more on the podcast. And I said, nothing happens here. No one will give a shit. Well, yeah. Shows what I fucking know, doesn't it?
Yeah, you think you can escape the long arm of American fascism, but no. We can export that anywhere. It's like an iPod for bad ideas.
Yeah, but we kind of like preempted it almost by electing a it's quite hard to describe Jacinda Ardern these days, to be honest. I just for some reason today sat down at my laptop intending to do something else and ended up writing 1500 words on why she's failing us and how she's failing us at the moment.
I saw that actually. That was not unfamiliar in terms of the complaint. Like as somebody who's come from, you know, who grew up in the Bay Area and can never, ever, 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 ever move back. It was like, oh, interesting. So you have a whole country of that.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got a whole country housing crisis, which isn't like a new problem, but boy, is no one doing anything about it. But that's fine. So yeah, in the intervening period, I don't know. I don't even know what's been going on with me. It's too long for me to remember anything that has happened. I had a briefly lived TV show, I think, just as we were, just after we rounded off, because it was in the lead up to that election that got Jacinda Ardern in the first time. That was kind of fun, and I've just been doing a lot of podcasting and comedy and going around the world. Guy and I made a pilot of The Worst Idea of All Time in New York City, where we lived in a sewer for a week.
I liked that.
By YouTube.
That was good.
It was cool.
Is that and that's available on YouTube and will be in the show notes?
Yeah, we put that up. Yeah, you can find that. Got married, got a dog.
Those two are not connected, right?
They're different things. I probably shouldn't have said that with one breath and no punctuation. But I also more recently helped get a person elected in the Auckland Central electorate named Chloe Swarbrick, who's sort of an old friend of mine, in a real upset victory. So that was kind of – it was fun to actually engage with the political process where the rubber meets the road and like – do calling and door knocking and that real good old fashioned campaigning stuff that you got to do to actually get someone elected. She wasn't supposed to win. It was a huge upset.
Is that something you had done before? I mean, not for her, obviously, but like, is that you were not practicing canvassing and
never.
Stuff like that?
I'd always avoided it because I didn't want to compromise my position from being able to write snarky tweets at everybody. And sort of held that to a pretty high value. But just looking around, seeing what was happening, looking at the states as a bit of a potential harbinger for what could be, what political winds could be blowing in New Zealand coming up. And more than anything, just seeing what's going on with the environment and the climate, I was like, hey, toot toot, motherfucker, time's up. Yeah. You need to go and do some stuff now. Like your ability to make jokes at everyone indiscriminately without someone being able to point a finger and go, oh, you're a bloody greenie, so you know you would say that. Don't care anymore. We have simply run out of time for those sorts of games.
Well, let me ask you this. So did it challenge your priors going into it? Were there things that you were comfortable ridiculing before you participated that you were like, you know what, I can't dunk on that anymore? Like, I know the other side of that, or...
No, I mean, the person in question, Chloe Swarbrick, did meet a pretty freaking high bar. She's a pretty exceptional person, and I will dunk on her when she does something stupid. It hasn't happened yet, but I also think part of the reason I support her is I think she is mature enough to understand that I will dunk on her, and that is necessary. That is part of the deal. So, you know, politicians have got to get that. But yeah, she's causing a real ruckus. So she's about 7 years younger than me, I think. I think that's right. Yeah, turned 26.
Yeah.
And she single-handedly...
Yeah, I hate that.
I know, right? She ran for mayor when she was 21 and caused a real hiss and a roar because she just performed so much better than anyone anticipated. All the media kind of flocked to her and covered her because she was such an oddity for being young. But then as soon as they put a microphone next to her... She was incredibly articulate on what the issues were and potential problems on solutions on how to solve them, and ended up ranking third in a field that I think, you know, usually you start with about 18 people. And I think by the end, there was about seven serious people who saw it out to the end, and she came third for mayor at 21. So then got courted by all the different political parties here in New Zealand, wound up at the Greens, and took... the Auckland Central seat, which is our biggest city here, obviously, off of a centre-right party that's held it for the last few terms. So really fucked off the Labour Party in New Zealand, tell you that for free. That was fun. Because they thought they would inherit it.
Out of curiosity, how was a lot of it just showing up and trying? I mean, the reason
to
why
an extent,
I ask is that,
yeah,
I'm looking, you know, tonight as you've got the fireworks going off in DC, and you know, people are sharing picture after picture of Tom Hanks just looking fucking cold, and you know,
it's not good. I know that guy got it early. We got to look after him.
Yeah, he does not say, like, you're listening to him and you're like, that is a man who has lost one third of his lung capacity.
Oh boy,
that is a raspy man. We're waiting on all the wind to come back, evidently. But you know, at the same moment that that's happening, and you have, you know, the kind of the celebrities of the Democratic Party, AOC's up in Brooklyn at a Teamsters strike, And she just tweeted a photo from it. And it's pathetic how much that's like, wow, I didn't know we could do that. But that, like, showing up is so much energy, you know, and I mean, she does so much more than showing. I mean, she's great on Twitter and, like, has, you know, the perfect sort of button reply to things. But a lot of what makes it a perfect button reply is she gets asked a question and she's like, well, let me answer it. That's it. That's the trick.
Not only that, but she's got genuine experience to draw on because she's been shoulder to shoulder with other people in these movements and constantly having these conversations. I mean, so Jeb and I had our first call in like 4 years, a couple of days ago, to see if we could conceivably bring this monster back to life, reanimate this podcast.
I really enjoyed, like, every 6 months, like, trading a DM, like, oh, that'd be great. Oh, we could do this. And then just, like, no, forgetting everything.
We were discussing a particular politician who you had a connection to earlier in life, who I'm intentionally not naming because I'll leave that up to you. And you were saying that they're part of the federal government, and they, I think, represent that trope on the right of family entitlement, and you just step into something. And it's no wonder that the guy sucks and always sounds stupid when he's asked something, because he's got none of that experience of, like, being in any kind of ideological fight. He hasn't been having those conversations earlier in life.
Yeah, I mean, well, the person we're talking about is Matt Gaetz, who went to my high school after I graduated, and he was on the debate team when I was a coach. But Matt was failing out of the Okaloosa County school system when his daddy decided to run for school superintendent. So he had to bring Matt back from the private school he was shipped off to because he couldn't get through, like, fucking Plu Elementary. So this was not a child who was predisposed to labor to begin with, or cleverness. And, you know, America has reaped the fruit of that. Like, I think the way that, you know, at least AOC, I don't know if I can, it applies to the politician, the Auckland politician you were speaking about, but, like, the thing that makes them unique is not necessarily from, like, the Matt Gaetzes, but from the people who are, like, you know, like the Simpsons episode where Abe Simpson winds up writing all the scripts and he was like, this guy's got something you eggheads don't have, life experience. And actually, I wrote my thesis on life experience. I mean, it's that kind of, like, it's all these people who went to Harvard and, like, and they took, like, poverty a seminar.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Like, any damage is, like, not, any damage is manageable if it's almost entirely theoretical. Like, oh, you know, we blew out the bulkhead and we lost 1,000 crew members to the vacuum of space.
So, yeah, I have been through some stuff because I watched that unfold in real time on a computer screen from the safety of our bunker. So those kind of peeps.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On this hallowed ground where just a few days ago violence sought to shake the Capitol's very foundation, we come together as one nation, under God, indivisible, to carry out the peaceful transfer of power as we have for more than two centuries.
So, I don't know if we want to get into this, because this might be taking a turn to Bummerville.
Sure.
But I know you don't want to make predictions. I've already asked you that. Mm-hmm. But what's your, like, readout on, fuck it, I'm just going to ask you predictions. How do you think this shit's going to go? Biden, Harris, they're in charge now. I hate to bring it up immediately, but the dude is very old. I anticipate we will probably get a President Harris by the end of this term. Sorry to be dark.
I mean, it's a grueling schedule, but he's not going to be on his feet the way he was on the trail. He's not going to be traveling the way he was on the trail. I think, you know, the exhaustion that people are seeing from him is certainly an effect of that, because if you catch him at different times of the day, and I don't mean, like, only morning, this isn't like a sundowning gag, But when he's been rested up, he still comes out there and delivers. So I think part of the broken downness maybe just is that. I don't know.
And just to specify a little bit, I'm not saying it's a mental decline thing, which I know is the popular refrain that he's got dementia or something like that. I don't believe that at all. If you watch him do his speeches at the moment, if you watch the speech that he delivered at the inauguration, he's doing the same kind of crank shtick that he's been doing for three decades, which is getting, you know, ever so slightly befuddled every now and then and lost a little bit. But like, he's always done that. That's not a decline. That has always been the wiggly line for him. But more just physical health of being a dude at, how old, at 80, 78?
The only presidential or political facts I know are about Trump and Jared. That's it. That's the only, that's all that happened.
That is the grimmest
years.
Pub quiz ever.
It is. I mean, like, have you, as a, looking remotely, have you, you know, because I know you read American papers and are you just like looking at all the articles and going like, oh, there's only two I need to read today? Because I definitely had that attitude. I was looking at the Post and I was like, well, I know that. Nothing's really happening there. Nothing. You know, I just sort of already caught myself going like, well, that's not on fire. That's not a crisis. Nobody's going to die. I don't need to read it. And I immediately was like, oh, shit. If Hillary had won, I'd be at brunch right now. You know, like that kind of, oh, I'm already checking out. I'm already being complicit in indifference.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I it's interesting. I absolutely checked the fuck out of the news. And I did it mainly when I stopped doing the Briefly Live TV show that I was hosting, because I had to be like so on the ball for that. We didn't have any... It was very funny. The guy who was in charge of the channel, which it's New Zealand, had very limited budget, basically had this idea that he wanted to do the Daily Show. But it was just me and this guy making it, who has no experience in politics, current events, programming for the news, anything like that. He's got a background in like reality television. And then it was just me. So I had to kind of consume everything. So as soon as that was done and New Zealand had been through that election cycle, I really washed my hands of that constant addictive news consumption cycle that I had gotten myself into. And I feel both dumber and happier for having done it. Like, it literally is a noticeable change in both of those respects. So in terms of like monitoring the fires and the crisis situations, I am now getting, I think, a truer picture of how most people live. I'm getting news via osmosis, which I know is a really dangerous way to get your information on what's happening, but I've got my little podcast that I listen to. I've got my little subreddits that will bring things to the top of my feed if they're breaking on the day. But I'm trying to read more books, to be honest, and read less day-to-day news. I don't know if that's a good, helpful, or politically moral thing to do, but it's what I've been doing.
See, maybe the trick is, and this is, and we got to get back to the predictions in a second, but like, do the thing I do with the, when the New Yorkers start to back up, you know, you just take all of them and you just put them in a box for about 9 months and you take them out and then you immediately don't read anything that's already irrelevant.
Oh yeah, that's good. Keep everything at arm's length a little bit and see what comes out at you from the page.
Right. Or like, you know, meet the new, you know, the new head of the Trump EPA, and you're like, well, if you wait long enough, right, like 32 separate ethics violations will get, you know, like, I don't need to know that anymore. Get the fuck out of here.
It's funny you bring him up, because I saw a clip of Rachel Maddow on, what's his name?
Seth Meyers, Late Night with Seth Meyers.
Thank you. And they were talking about the fact that I can't even remember who it was, but the chief of the EPA had that like telephone booth installed in his office so that he could make hyper secure calls.
Yeah, there was a skiff in the EPA building, but he needed his personal skiff, and like the first thing that everyone goes is like, well, he's just doing crimes in there.
Right? Like, that guy's doing crimes in that box, that little box he made, that like, little crime box.
Like, somebody drills a hole in the side of the skiff, and then all you hear is like, he's just reading odds to people. It turns out he's running a bookie operation in there.
Someone will definitely, they'll be in the process of this right now. It's probably at the printers, but just like a book of all of the scandals that's like a coffee table book. So you can just pick it up and flick to a page and it'll give you the date and a news story of some absurd thing that happened. Like when Jared tried to get a phone line installed so he could directly talk to the Russians when he had no security clearance.
Or when he showed up in Arabia, like reviewing the troops, but he was wearing some tight, like Italian tailored body armor. It's like, well, it's got a higher arm slot and it's got the double venting on the back as opposed to the single.
God damn. We changed men. We're in a different world than we were last time we did one of these. That's for sure.
Yeah. Suits are thinner. Lives are shorter. So predictions, like the thing that sticks with me is that, you know, everybody's really keyed up right now about the idea that corporate donations and are going to dry up for, you know, these you know, Republican malefactors. But that optimism isn't borne out even by like the data on the ground right now, because those same corporate, you know, entities can still, they haven't pledged not to do any PAC money. So what's no longer going in the front door is probably just going to come straight in the back. So I don't think that there's really any penalty that these guys are going to face. And if you look at the Republican caucus, it's like, you know, it's Romney and situationally some other people that we think of as like being sort of the standard bearer of the Republican Party, or like the sort of overall tone and approach. But like at that, now it's the outlier. I mean, everybody, you know, it's pretty much all lunatics. And I hate to be reductive that way, but like, you know, when they're not lunatics, they're people who cosplay as lunatics to their own advantage. And, you know, they have elevated not listening and, you know, deliberately misunderstanding to a virtue and have been repeatedly rewarded for it. So I don't see the deterrence on the horizon unless the Biden administration does sort of what they started doing today, which is just going insanely fast. Just do the Trump thing in reverse, but for good. You know, the Bannon said, like, let's flood the zone. But instead of doing it with lies, just do it with like proposals, rule changes, regulations, just throw laws at Congress, make the Republicans say no, no, no over again, make them define themselves. And that can work. But like, you know, the refrain that you've seen, and this is kind of getting back to the doomsaying thing of people going like, Trump is gone, so everything's fine. But like, he's gone, but all of the underlying conditions are there. And 50 of them are senators, or 49 minus Romney.
Yeah. I think that first point you made is something that so bears like repeating and holding on to a bit, which is that I personally had this assumption that once we started getting to the end of the road of this thing, when we started winding down, that the Republican Party would have to start to reckon with where it's at for no other reason than simple math. Like, you've got to try and capture half of the country to stay in power. And they haven't done that. Like you said, it's been my observation as well that the people who were there, I couldn't name a second person after Romney. Like, I noticed that you said Romney and a few other people. I don't know who the even other person is that isn't a flaming lunatic.
Yeah, like Bob Corker retired. It's like Corker. God, who else?
Exactly. This is my point, right? It's a very scary thing because I know this isn't a completely new idea that I'm floating out there, but the fact that Trump was as stupid and feckless and easily distracted as he was, there is, I think, a pretty low chance that that'll get repeated, that America will get that lucky again, that they'll get someone who is so gifted at demagoguery and whipping up a crowd and getting all of the very real problems that a lot of people are experiencing and fomenting that into bigotry and then arming that into a very violent political base. I don't think the next person who manages to do that successfully is going to be as stupid and as ill-disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why the real work that needs to happen is an inoculation of the public, you know, against this sort of thing. A better education and, like, better critical thinking, a more advanced understanding of, I don't know, it's not just civics, it's like, I hate to sound like a college professor, I didn't go to university, but political philosophy. Like, the reason why everyone waves a big flag and says democracy is great, cool. We should have a discussion every now and then about why and kick the tires on it so that we can remind ourselves why that's the case and what those threats to it are.
Yeah, I mean, part of it, like, American, you take a, you know, the average government course in what they used to call civics, you know, not like an AP course, which is the advanced placement and counts for college credit. But if you're doing that, you're going to get like real kind of like child's almanac America. You know, it's just sort of one tautology after another. And that definitely, you know, once you have that worldview and you've got, again, sort of like this sort of high Sorkin church and really both parties in, engage in it, reifying this sort of story of America that you've been told by the sort of textbook that the Texas Board of Education wouldn't get pissed about. But, you know, on the other hand, like the converse of that is that, you know, partisanship intensifies with education because you get better at rationalizing the things that challenge your worldview and ideologically sorting, you know, convenient and inconvenient facts. And, you know, like Ted Cruz is that as an operation. So is Josh Hawley, like as people, they're that mental process, but just given hideous bodies. Well, Josh Hawley's all right. I mean, I hate to admit it.
It's interesting then. So if education isn't the thing that inoculates a populace to this sort of a thing, then what do you think is?
Well,
is it kindness? Is it traveling the world? Because I don't think we're allowed to do that anymore.
Well, one thing, I mean, you know, actually, I kind of want to just go back to the concern you had, though. So before I answer that, which is that, you know, you're not wrong. I mean, I'm worried, too, about a more effective demagogue than Trump, a more disciplined and more intelligent, focused, more strategic rather than reactive thinker. But like, I'm not sure that the sort of person who can be that is the sort of person who's going to get elected. You know, but to answer your question, I mean, there's a strong corollary between nativism, xenophobia, street violence with, you know, economic downturns, et cetera. So prosperity helps to inoculate that somewhat. America's been very bad at distributing its prosperity. If they get better at redistributing it, that'd be nice. I mean, everybody I know, probably you included, like screams at the Democratic Party, hey, you know, taxing the rich people is bipartisanly popular. Republicans like the idea of taxing super rich people. So try it, you know, and redistribute some things. And then, yeah, I mean, obviously you can do kindness. I mean, I think the other thing is that when we're starting to see it, I mean, just the structure of this entire inaugural ceremony was fuck you for trying that. And if we get more of that in the public sphere, even if you're just peeling off a couple Republicans at a time, but just the idea that that gets reinforced, because we have experienced passively for at least my entire lifetime, the amplification of the bloody Tree of Liberty rhetoric that has been almost entirely arrogated to the Republican Party. Democrats don't talk about like basically purging their enemies in, you know, a rebirthing blood, but that has been, you know, that's a lifetime's worth of that. And that does accrete, you know, like those little moments of, okay, you can get away with making it this ugly. Okay, we'll make it a little bit uglier and see if you got away with it. And then, you know, just this iterative process of like finally ending up at Nazism after a few bits of, we'll just kill the person we don't like.
So are you saying that we're learning that lesson now? Do you think that we reached that final line in the sand, which was literally people dying as they tried to overthrow the Capitol building?
I have to hope so, but I think so. And partly it's because, I mean, like, you know, you've heard the line about, it got recycled a lot with Trump. The line about bankruptcy, it happens slowly for a long time and then all at once. And, you know, that's fascism. Seen it creeping into the public sphere. We've seen leading Republican strategists admit that this is essentially it. Not, let's say, overt fascism, but let's say parafascistic reasoning or policies have been seeping in for such a long time. But to get it back to what kicked this off, you know, when you talk about people like Hawley or Cruz or this next demagogue, what nobody ever mentions that Trump was actually fun. Like, he was entertaining. He was also funny. Like, I mean,
he was fucking funny, dude.
Yeah.
Like, game recognized game. That guy was really funny.
He had beautiful timing for so many things. And like, especially, and you could tell sometimes when he really thought of a good one, you could see that sort of like ripple kind of pass across his expression. And then he buried it in that to deliver the line even better. You know, you were expecting sort of like a little bit of glee and then it got tamped down. And you're like, that's beautiful instinct. You know, it makes you want to get a DeLorean and hit 88 and grab him at some time around 1979 and just put him on like New York talk radio. Because that would have been perfect.
Absolutely. Well, my understanding is that this all happened because he was trying to start a TV station. Like, that was the actual aim. I think he was seen talking to Roger Ailes quite a lot at the very beginning, and he was going to try and make some sort of alternative version of Fox, or like out Fox Fox. And that's what got us all into this sticky mess in the first place.
Yeah, well, nobody's confirmed it on the record, but it's one of those things that, you know, you've had like unnamed source has said they had no plan on election night in 2016. Mm. They were expecting to lose. And, you know, this is just fundraising and building contacts for whatever future business. But the I think the precipitate one that I read, and it wasn't that long ago, probably for the first time in years, it's been funny, like, as the coda to the Trump era gets written, going back and reading these things that were just like steeped and so immediate in the mind in January of 2018. And now you're like, I was really upset about that, but I can't imagine why. Man,
do you mean 2016?
2016, right. Yeah. But supposedly the actual thing that I read that kicked it all off was he wanted to be a Broadway producer. He wanted to be like a great showman on Broadway. And if somebody could have like put him into impresario school, you know, we could have all been doing a lot better. But
Donald Trump wanted to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is nuts.
But, you know, who are we going to get that has that timing? I mean, Ted Cruz is physically repulsive. I mean, like, that's one of the most uncanny things was like hearing people in a Ted Cruz audience talk, like people who'd gone to see Ted Cruz on purpose still talk about how weird he looked, you know. And he's just this little worm, and Josh Hawley is this little worm. So yeah, like, you know, if there had been a competent Trump, oh, we'd all be fucked. But it was the incompetence that kind of made him, you know, and things beyond our control. The fact that he had been on, you know, he'd been on Entertainment Tonight for 35 years. He'd been on, you know, Access Hollywood, good and bad, for many, many years. He was on the radio, on the TV, on The Apprentice.
That shouldn't be overlooked either, because the era of families or even friends living in communal living situations, sitting down, watching the same thing on TV, like America watching the same TV show all together, that has sort of ended now, because the media consumption landscape is so fractured by streaming services that the thing that was most powerful to get Trump in the position where he could exploit it and become a nominee, B, the front runner, C, the president, was the fact that he had this huge stranglehold over media. And I don't think a person's kind of capable of doing that now. You can become a big star to your audience, but that audience is never going to be as big as they used to be able to be on network television.
And then if we see any tweaking algorithmically in the social media companies that are inhibits getting people radicalized by this sort of, by personalities that are, you know, magnetic and negative, like, even then, how do you necessarily build that singular audience? I mean, he, you know, it helped that people didn't see him coming as a politician. You know, you can't put Marco Rubio on TV for 7 years and just say, well, he's on TV because he's Marco Rubio. Like, Trump, at least, you know, it was as gratuitous as possible, but he put in the branding effort. That was a lot of free earned airtime that he put in over his life that we're not apt to see again, I would hope.
You are, I think, the longest serving senior administration official. Why have you survived?
Immodestly, I'm extremely good at what I do. We'll have something like 500 executive orders or presidential memorandum by the time we're finished here. That's about two or three a week. That's more than any other administration has. So I describe sort of my job and my role as being the submarine under the surface. It just keeps pulling on. When all the waves and storms are above the water, below the surface, we just get on with things.
I think we should probably wind things down. I know it is really late where you are. I just want to mention one thing as we are wrapping up that kind of ties our two worlds together, Jeb, or our countries at least. And that's a guy by the name of Chris Liddell. Does that name mean anything to you? He's Trump's deputy chief of staff.
No.
And he is the longest serving staff member who's not a family member to Trump. And he is a New Zealander. So he, while the Capitol insurgency riots, I'm not sure what the terminology we're using is, while it was happening in real time, Chris Liddell instructed his PR people to start ringing around journalists in New Zealand to offer them interviews in exchange for not reporting on him for 2 weeks. And in particular, the first guy to blow the whistle on this is a guy called Matthew Houghton, who's like a center-right political strategist and broadcaster, recently tried to help the leader of the National Party, which is our center-right party, and it all went famously wrong, which is quite hilarious. But he actually blew the whistle on Twitter. He was like, hey, guess what phone call I just got? And then a couple of other journalists came out afterwards seeing the tweet as well and said, yeah, I got the same call. So there's this fucking dude from New Zealand who's been incredibly successful in business, joined the Trump administration, managed to stay just under the radar, but was beloved by the entire family and really trusted by Trump himself, became deputy chief of staff, stuck out the entire duration of the thing, and now is trying to escape back to New Zealand to start his life anew here. And we cottoned on to it, and everyone is just like, absolutely not. That is not happening. So it's an interesting wrinkle recently to see what's going to happen with this guy from a really small town called Matamata, where he's going to end up now. But he just seems so radioactively toxic that I don't know what you do with your life after this.
I'm sure there's a cigarette company that needs somebody to write press releases somewhere. But in bringing up the insurrection, you reminded me of the thing that I wanted to come back to before we go really quickly. And it just, when we talked about, when you asked, did I think that the Capitol assault would sort of break this spell? I mean, this is something you see in history over and over and over, you know, enough that it's a tedious metaphor even within journalism, but people obsessively always fighting the last war. Because they lack the ability to reimagine the struggle in anything other than the last formative terms for them, right? So like the classic example is the French going, well, we're not going to have World War One happen again. We're going to build a Maginot Line. And then instead they get an extremely kinetic war that is not based on fixed positioning, right? So like for the Democrats, they've spent 40 years getting their ass kicked to this rhetoric, but it's never, you know, it's never blown into the open. And then seeing it, I think that's going to be catalytic in a way that, you know, even Trump's rhetoric wasn't, because you could always sort of say like, well, yeah, but he's just a blowhart. It doesn't manifest really in the world, or when it does manifest, we can get by with the sort of, cover of, well, this guy is clearly a lunatic, right? This guy with the van and the mail bombs. Like if you see the painting on the van, like he's nuts. But this was, you had basically everybody that the conservative movement has told us is like a premium plus American citizen, police, soldiers, and Republican office holders, and involved in this, like this spontaneous and like, ultimately hair's breadth away from being terrifyingly successful action. And I think that is enough to finally make people go, you know what, the pattern that we've been locked into because we think that these are the only norms that we can use to constrain the chaos of politics. These are the only schema we can direct things in. Now you're going like, no, they finally broke it. and we get to do something different. And that's why I kind of, as I was saying earlier, I was encouraged by just the sheer velocity of everything the Biden administration did. And they can keep it up. That would be incredible. And then they can use that momentum to reset the terms of the debate. You know, they, as I was saying earlier, just keep putting bills in front of Republicans and make them vote against them and change the story. But as long as Democrats think that any bill they introduce is going to diminish a fixed amount of political capital that cannot be replenished over the course of a term, right? They seem to not understand that if you do good things for people at the start of a term, you actually can increase the capital or not decrease it over the course of it. And maybe kind of awakening to the fact that that's a possibility can completely reframe how it's approached. Like just the idea of permissibility in government governance and also what is now going to be anathema to us as a people.
All right, Jeb. Well, on that, I think ultimately positive note that you think that the insurrectionists got so far as to break the current system that we're in, which gives us hope for a new possible future in an Overton window that has been enlarged and opened. This metaphor is not working very well. It's really nice to see you, man. It's good to talk to you again. I'm really glad you're alive. I'm glad that your country still exists. I'm glad that democracy is still the prevailing system of constraining power in America. And we're all wishing you guys the best. We really are. We're hoping it goes well.
Yeah, well, listen, as somebody who lives in a nation of potentially more collateral damage from us, I understand it's self-preservation. It's like, no, we love you. You're great. I'm just going to back away slowly. I got my hands up.
One single stray nuke in the right location would take out the entire country. But we will catch you guys soon. In the meantime, just look after yourself. Do whatever you need to do. I was speaking to someone on Twitter today. She was like, I'm just going to get really baked and have a really long bath. That's what I think my psyche needs to get into this next phase of things.
Yeah, that's, take the day, take the week. We'll reconvene and try to maintain this positivity in spite of the fact that really, I don't think at any point in our lives we've been given any reason to believe in it, but you know, like if we just go kick Lucy hard enough, we can get the football and we can give it to somebody else this time.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.